Welcome to SciTech Culture with Steve Kern and Ben Warner, where we examine science, technology and culture in the 21st century. Visit our website at scitechculture.com.
The Rampocalypse is coming for all of your devices. It's scary stuff, isn't it? Everything's becoming more expensive. You know, it's hard to like look at things that, you know, used to cost a certain price. You might have been in the market for something and it, you know, it's now a couple of hundred bucks more, $1,000 more, whatever it happens to be. Obviously, it's generating a certain amount of, antipathy, anxiety, that kind of thing when around, you know, consumer buying habits when it comes to these devices. I guess this kind of flows on from our last episode. I know our last episode was a bit of a downer on the state of AI and everything, but this is kind of another impact of all of those AI data centers getting built and sucking all the RAM out of the room, so to speak. But before we dive into some of the Pixel announcements, what it might mean for the iPhone, etc., just did want to touch on the Z Fold 8. It's a Z, I think. Okay, so we now have another folding form factor that didn't exist before. Now, just spoiler alert, Samsung has a habit of releasing the iPhone's next design 6 months ahead of time, just like they did with the Galaxy Edge last year. We will be probably getting an iPhone that has this form factor as well, probably by next month. I found it a bit more interesting than the previous ones, and that's largely only because that when it's unfolded, it's more like an iPad mini style screen, form factor, whatever, when you're looking at it. I'm still not sold on the form, the folding side of things, only because, again, I'm in it for the cameras as well. I want my slab to have the best cameras possible. It's not going to have that. Presumably, the iPhone's going to be the same. It won't have the full camera setup. And then it comes down to you're paying the premium to unfold it. How many times are you going to unfold it? Are you going to unfold it? Is it thin enough in its closed form that it could pass as a standard phone? I don't know. The passport look, like I said, that's good when it's unfolded. I could probably get used to the squattier look, but I don't know. I just thought I'd bring this one up just quickly at the beginning, because I know we've discussed this before, but I still feel like we're circling the same, at least I feel like I'm circling the same answer anyway.
Ben, at least you're talking about the most innovative phone that we'll probably see this year. Like, look, you know, you're right, we have spoken about this before. I appreciate the folding phones. Not that I'd have one, not that you'd have one, not the fact that they look like a sandwich and this one looks like a square sandwich once it's folded. When you unfold it, it's great and that's good and all those things. But if you're one of those people, it's the phone for you. If you're not, like for the rest of us, nothing to see here. But hats off to Samsung for at least doing something that might be useful to some people, and it's new and it is innovative, and they've led the foldable phone charge. So I congratulate them for that. I mean, we're going to talk more about the other phone offerings at the moment, and I think, you know, everyone will agree that this is probably the most exciting phone out of all of them.
Well, that's a good segue, because it's definitely a lot more exciting than what, say, Google just recently announced with its Pixel phones. And sure, the Pixel phones are operating in a niche part of the market anyway. I don't think a lot of people are going out and buying them. There are obviously Pixel enthusiasts out there, and it's largely around the fact that you're getting what, stock Android that isn't, bloated with manufacturer bloat. Not to repeat myself, but that's bloating as it is. You're getting sort of like Google only experience with the phone, and supposedly the cameras are very good, and that's a highlighted part of the experience, etc., so they say. And you're getting this year the AI experience. But what, just to pull back to the Rampocalypse opening that we started with, it would seem that the hardware this time is a bit of a downgrade compared to previous iterations, or anything that they did with it isn't necessarily anything more special or even needed compared to previous iterations of the phone. So you're getting less RAM, you know, for essentially, and essentially it is the same phone. I'm sure someone will nitpick somewhere that, yeah, it's got X, Y, and Z that they've added to it. But it's telling when Google's whole presentation was more geared around, look at all the stuff we've done with the software. And then, like, sure, I'm not going to question that. You've done amazing things with the software. But if the hardware is not really that much better than a Google Pixel 10 or a Pixel 9, why can't you just go out and pick up a Pixel 9 or a Pixel 10 for half the price and get the same experience?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. Google's been around for, what, 10 generations now? And if it was as good as people wish it was, then it'll be up there with the iPhone, but it's not. And the reason that, you know, them upping the software isn't really a draw card is because Google does software pretty poorly, let's be honest. So, you know, you've got a phone that was okay, and I know plenty of people who have had one Pixel phone and not a second. So that's telling you something there, right there. You know, then you, like you say, take the phone actually a step back, but promise all these other things that don't work anyway. Well, you know, not to mention turns off your privacy settings, changes everything else in the Android setup whenever you're not looking. You know, I think for me, it's a no-go zone, but it is indicative, and I think it's a huge turning point, because this step back by Google is being forced by the hardware shortages. And I think for the first time we're seeing phones, new model phones, not going anywhere. You know, they're trying to sell other features. You know, it used to be, oh, we got a new camera, or we, you know, we've jammed in, you know, extra RAM, or we've done something amazing that's going to let you be amazing. They can't even say that about the hardware anymore. And I think for me, that's something that is a signal. I don't know what it's saying, but it's a signal.
Well, not to mention the fact that if they really want users to start paying for, say, Gemini monthly and use it on their brand new Pixel 11, that they would boost the hardware, because the hardware, you need it to run it locally on the phone. Yet
it's, precisely.
So that's kind of an interesting kind of point there, which also I wanted to bring the iPhone into this as well. We don't know what the iPhone 18 will be. There's fairly strong, you know, sort of rumors around what it'll be, which would seem to indicate a fairly, you know, low-key iterative upgrade compared to last year. That's not to say that they won't bring improvements, because I think Apple will still bring a level of, you know, year-on-year improvement. They don't ever seem to take a step back from that. But having said that, with the rumored price increases that are coming now, there's precedent for it. Apple's already raised the prices of a whole bunch of their other products, so it stands to reason the iPhone's going to go up. Rumor being around $300 for each device. In Australia, that'll probably be $500-$600 Australian, at which point that's pushing a lot of, like, the Pro Max tiers into $3,000 territory range.
Jeez.
So
that hurts.
There's the that does hurt. It would certainly put you, it would certainly put me off. Not that I'm not upgrading by any means. But the thing that is interesting is that there's a bit of wisdom going around now that usually in August, you're usually recommended not to buy a new iPhone because new ones are going to come out in September. But it would seem this is the first year where the recommendation is maybe you should buy a 17 because it's going to be cheaper. And the rumored price, and when you factor in the rumored price increase for the 18, the 17 becomes a better value now, which, you know, we'll expand this out a little bit more, which, you know, is talking about, you know, this movement to buy older and refurbed and used tech, or just older models, is actually better value in the current market climate, which is interesting.
Well, it is, and but I think you're right. So Apple is always committed to at least an incremental improvement. So I don't think we'll see much of an improvement. And the fact that they're delaying the release of the standard range of iPhones as well appears to play into this crunch. And I think that, you know, Apple's been panned for their incremental improvements over the years. But they won't go backwards, but I think they're now at a point where they can't really give us that much more. And I mean, please, please don't come out and tell us that the Apple iOS is going to be fantastic on the new phone, because a bit like the Pixel, it's not going to cut it. You know, and you would, if you're going to face a price hike, I think typically for any Apple user, you take the price hike. Over 20 years of being an Apple user, I've seen Apple go ridiculous prices in Australia when the exchange rate's been poor, through to good exchange rates and back again. And as someone who uses Apple products, you just wear that, because you're going to get a device or a product that you have some sort of faith in. If it's really just going to be the same, they're just going to change the number on the model and charge you $500 more, that starts to get hard to stomach.
Right, and I just wanted to mention too, and this was something we mentioned before we started recording the episode today, which is about a shift in whether you need to upgrade that quickly anyway. I mean, I know there's, you know, that's par for the course. Like these days, you wouldn't. If you think about the Mac line, for instance, I would run into that wall at around the 5-year mark for the laptops, where it wouldn't do the stuff where I would push it more like Final Cut editing or something like that. But these days, you know, I've still got my M1 Pro machine. It can run large language models on it. It can still run 4K Final Cut video editing on it, no problem whatsoever. And I just think, well, I'm just going to run this into the ground. And it might be in 10 years time, or not, well, 10 years from purchase, in other words. It's fine. And maybe that's just the approach. Like, maybe there is a higher cost you have to pay right now, but maybe you ride that thing for as long as possible. And certainly everything is built now to last that long.
Well, I think that the market is going to dictate that things will last longer. So if we're getting a capping now on hardware performance because all the chips are going to data centers or wherever they're sending them, then effectively, if the phones aren't improving, then the difference between a 17 model and 18 model is going to be negligible. The operating system it runs, whether it's Pixel, whether it's, as you pointed out, get a 9 or a 10, you know, like the same with iOS 17, 18, it's not going to make any difference. And if the pressure from on the hardware is maintained and we don't really see any hardware improvements because they can't get the chips for 3 years, that effectively means you buy that 17 today, maybe it's going to last you 8 years potentially.
Exactly. And that might be a good place to be, really. Maybe that's forced sustainability, put it that way.
That's it. I'm going out today, Ben.
Absolutely. All right, before we finish up today, complete change of topic. I threw this in because it was hilarious, and we don't normally talk politics on this show, but there was the by-election in the UK for the seat of Clacton?
Clacton, yeah.
Nigel Farage managed to get himself back in, but why I wanted to mention this was because of good old Count Binface and the fact that he managed to get as many votes as he did. And it made me wonder, you know, when you look at a character like Farage, obviously there's characters like that in other countries as well. And Farage, like in particular, seems to get away with murder in terms of whatever he says, and it sort of slides right off him. But this to me seemed like almost like one of the first times where the Count Binface thing was just so ridiculous and so sarcastic and so pointed out how ridiculous really Farage is. Is that a way to actually get to him? Which I would find, to me, that would be almost like the ultimate irony in politics, really. You just have to satirize.
Well, I couldn't believe that with Binface running, they could only get 40% of the electorate to vote. but that aside, I mean, even if you look at the votes cast, Farage only got 2 out of 3 votes. Right. So, you know, you kind of think, well, you know, it was always going to be a Farage victory. I don't think he can claim it as some sort of victory like he's trying or attempting to now, but it goes to show you that I think there's still some sensibility. And Binface, even though I couldn't tell you any of his policies, except they weren't Farage's policies, and Farage can tell you his policies, but not how they're going to work. You know, you've got two equal candidates, so at least it gave us something with the other major parties not contesting. It gave us, I think, a fairly fair fight.
and culturally, Binface went viral, so there you go.
Well, that's right. A bit disappointed, though, that Binface didn't do better.
It certainly would have added an interesting spectacle to the parliament, let's put it that way.
After Bodie McBoatface, like, I was hoping for Binface.
Where to from here? Absolutely, absolutely. All right, Stephen, I'll wrap it up there. And, get on to the buying of that hardware, because who knows, it'll be $500 more next week, probably.
and we'll be saving money and it'll last for 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, so that's it for this week's episode. We'll catch you next time.